Welcome to the Katie Bulmer Cook Podcast Show. Fitness, workouts, nutrition, business, interviews, entrepreneurship, and of course, plenty of northern banter. Here she is, your host, Katie Bulmer Cook.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Katie Bulmer Cook Podcast Show. Thanks for coming back and having a listen, and thanks for all of your feedback and your comments. It's been great to hear what you thought of all the guests via Facebook and via Twitter. So if you want to tweet, and if you want to ask the guests any questions, if you want to ask me any questions, or if you would like to request a guest on the show, then please tweet me at KatieBulmer1. Got a really cool guest for you today. I've got the lovely George Anderson. George is a running coach, he's a PT, and he has done some fantastic personal challenges recently. So without any further ado, George, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Katie, thanks for having me on.
George, I'd like to start, as I always do, by having my guest introduce themselves. So if you could tell the listeners how you got into the fitness industry, what's your background, what's your story, and how did that take you from there to where you are now?
Okay, and how long is this podcast again?
It's a big question, isn't it?
I was actually at Loughborough University, and I was studying for an engineering degree, and back in sort of the late 1990s. And while I was doing my degree, I was like, this isn't really for me. Engineering just wasn't going to float my boat for a career. And I knew that I wanted to do something fitnessy, so I did a gym qualification, a level 2 gym qualification when I was in my second class year. Actually, mainly because I thought it would be a great way of meeting girls. To be honest, that was the main reason. But I really kind of got into it. It wasn't in the end, because you just end up being a glorified cleaner in working in a gym. £6.20 an hour, or whatever it was. But I really enjoyed just being in a position where I could help people, and I could express my passion for exercise and fitness. And I was a 400-meter runner at the time at university. So I just really loved it, and I knew that when I left, I wasn't going to go into engineering. I did want to just see what the fitness industry, which I knew nothing about, what it had in store for me. So I moved to Reading, got a job at a local fitness first, which was just opening up, and their model was self-employed. So I became a self-employed personal trainer, again, not really part of any grand scheme. And that's how it all started. I just got into training clients, really, really enjoyed it. Realised I was able to connect quite well with people, and then one day I just decided, you know, I want to sort of specialise in something. And I've always done a bit of running. I've been running since I was like 8 years old, not non-stop obviously, but I have been on and off running for it since I was 8. And so I figured, well, that's as good a place as any to decide to specialise, to carve out my niche. And that really then snowballed into all the other things I do with running that I do today. So all the online stuff, my Intelligent Marathon program, Intelligent Half Marathon, the book, the Beginner's Luck Guide for Non-Runners, my foray into helping complete novice runners, workshops, ultra running, loads of online stuff. And my local program here in Tame, where I live in Oxfordshire, is a regular boot camp, which is just I've been doing for the last 5 years. So yeah, a bit of everything really over the last decade and a bit.
Cool. Now the running stuff really intrigued me, because me and you had a conversation at an event a couple of weeks ago, and we're both talking about running and how we train for distance events. So I've recently done the Great North Run, and you have done a much bigger personal achievement than that, which we'll come onto in a second. But I'm really interested for you to tell the listeners what's the framework, the basic framework of you training for a distance event. Do you hit the streets every day, or have you got something else up your sleeve?
Well, I think I've really got to pre-frame this by saying I'm actually quite lazy when it comes to training. I like the Tim Ferriss approach of the minimal effective dose. Mm-hmm. So I try and find, well, to get the best results, what is the least amount of work I can put in, the least number of runs that I can do in a week, that's going to get me to where I want to be. Because with the flip side of that as well is if you do too much, you do lots and lots of running, which many runners do, then often the end result is injury.
Mm.
And I knew that I've always known that I've wanted to avoid that. So the framework which I hang all of my training programs off, right from beginner to marathon and how I train for my sort of ultra marathon, was to just train two or three times a week. So that's three runs a week. I'm a big, big believer in the body conditioning as well. So I would do a couple of body conditioning workouts as well. Just regular strength work, some stability work, plenty of time, getting down, getting dirty with a foam roller.
Mm-hmm.
And doing all the support stuff as well, so that I don't have to be out there every single day tramping the streets. I'll tell you the other thing, Katie, I like running, but I wouldn't want to do it every day.
Yeah.
So I like to do different things and keep it varied.
It takes a lot of time, doesn't it? And I know people who were training for the Great North Run are in the same time as me, and were saying it's just finding the time to do like an 8-miler, to do a 10-miler in the run-up to a half marathon.
Yeah, it is hard. And you know what? When you're out there and you're on the start line, the hard work is being done. People see you. That famous Muhammad Ali quote, you know, all the training was done before. This isn't the quote, this is a really bad paraphrase, mm-hmm. but he did all the training without being in the spotlight, well before he danced under the lights. And that's what it's like with running. You're on there on the day, then that's where the magic happens. And it's almost easy to do the race, but you've got to find the time beforehand.
Yeah.
You've got to commit yourself. You've got to get out there where no one's looking. No one cares if you don't do it or not, apart from you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's hard. Finding that time to do that is the biggest challenge, which is what makes it an achievement. So yeah, the more you can almost hack the system, the easier it's going to be.
Okay, so now I know the basics of how you train for distance events. Now tell everyone who's listening, what was the massive achievement that I'm talking about?
I had this idea of running a marathon in Tain, which is this very small town just outside of Oxford. And I wanted to kind of, I thought, you know, I'd do it in loops, and I'll, so a 5 or 6 mile loop and do that 5 times. And I thought, well, I could do that. But then what if I were to do that 10 times in a row? So a marathon a day for 10 days, but just locally, not going from town to town. And because that's what we've done. You know, I wanted to do this. I want to be the first man in Tain to do 10 back-to-back marathons. Mm-hmm. So I did it. I built up over the summer and I did those 10 marathons. I actually started on my birthday, my 36th birthday.
Oh dear, yeah, what a birthday present.
I know, it was an interesting, I'm never going to get that as a birthday. Mm. And I started that at the beginning of September and I went all the way through till the 11th and did the 10 in 10.
That is very, very impressive, George. And how did you feel when you were doing it? Did you ever have any times when you thought, God, what have I done here yet? I'm not sure I'm going to make it. Or did you have a really positive outlook the whole way through? Did you feel like you were just in your groove?
At times. And then there were other times where I made the mistake of looking down at the hole. And this is one of the big lessons that I got out of it, is that you can only run the road that you're on. And there was a moment in the 7th marathon where I was about 18 miles in and I was in real trouble. I was hurting. I was just getting slower and slower. I just couldn't find myself, how I was going to pick this back up again. And I suddenly looked at myself from above and I saw that I was in this amount of pain. I still had 8 miles to go. But not only that, I still had a marathon to run the next day, and then another marathon to run the next day, and then another marathon to run the next day. And at that moment there, I just felt myself sinking and getting really, that was the major low point for me. Mm. But as somebody said to me afterwards, it's about embracing those low points. And that was probably the biggest point of learning for me.
Mm-hmm.
And almost the reason I went in to do it was because I wanted to give myself that mental challenge. So I was, you know, in the end, retrospectively, I was grateful for having the opportunity to break through that low point and mm-hmm. come out the other side.
How long do you think it took you afterwards, when you've done your 10 marathons, 10 consecutive days, how long do you think it took your body to properly recover from that?
Well, I tore my quad, actually, on the very last day, and that took about 3 weeks to recover. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, the next day, I didn't feel any different to how I felt the day before or the day before that. I think that the thing I really focused on was that I wasn't running a marathon. I was just going out for a long run. And yeah. even when I was leaving the house in the morning, I kissed the kids and my wife goodbye and say, right, I'm going for a run. And really try to break it down into something much less scary mm-hmm. than the word marathon. Because everybody has this, we're meaning-making machines. If you look at LLP, that's what we're regarded as. So you say the word marathon to somebody, and you go back and you look at what your experience of a marathon is, whether you've run one before, or you've seen it on a TV, or you've heard other people telling you horror stories, and they're always just the most atrocious stories of personal pain and having to push through. But that's not what I was doing. So I was getting up in the morning, and I was going for a run well within my capabilities. I could have run 3:15, 3:20 for the first marathon, for example. I didn't, though. I ran it in 4 hours 28. So the next day I woke up, legs were a little achy, but I was able to run again. If I'd run it at 3:20, I wouldn't have been getting up the next morning and dancing around and doing another marathon.
Yeah.
So my body was recovering fine during the runs. I knew that I'd done something the day before, but it wasn't in the same way as it might have been had I really, really been pushing myself to reach the runs.
And what about nutrition, George? Because this always fascinates me, because I've read so many contradicting reports and bits of advice about how do you keep yourself going for that duration. So for me, personally, when a 5.5 marathon, I'm just good on just water. That does it for me. I'm not really, the energy gels and stuff don't seem to make that like a big impact on me. What about you?
Sorry, I just seeing the dog barking in the background. Is that a button that you press for one of their special noise effect buttons?
No.
Because I heard that dog in the background of some of your other podcasts as well.
It's my two crazy dogs that anyone just walks past. Anyone considers walking in our street, and that's what you get. You get bits and Bella in the background.
No, it's good. I thought it was a special button you have to press when you're asking a questionnaire. Anyway, no, I was concentrating. Yeah, nutrition was, for me, was a really important part of the preparation and during the run itself. And I've really been looking into race and run nutrition quite a lot lately. And a friend of mine, actually a guy called Warren Pohl, who is an ultra runner and is also a journalist, has started up his own company of sports nutrition called 33 Shake. And their sports nutrition products are based on real food. So none of your maltodextrin, synthetic sweeteners or anything like that. It's all chia seeds, acai berries. It's got all the superfoods in their main shake and then in their actual gels. Because I used energy gels when I was going, but they were just like 90% chia seeds. Mm. You add water to them and then you've got a gel. So it's a very, very different concept. I could have run any of those marathons without any nutrition whatsoever. In fact, in some of my long runs, I was getting up in the mornings, my training runs, I was getting up in the morning, having a big old glass of water and going out for a 24-mile run. And I wasn't taking anything with me. I wasn't drinking anything or having any fuel. I was running on empty and I felt fine.
Yeah.
But the next day, I was really tired. In fact, later the same day, I was really tired. I considered my nutrition on the run not being for the day, my nutrition today was for my performance tomorrow.
Okay.
So I knew that if I didn't get it right on one day, then I was going to suffer the next day. And that was what was important. If I wasn't running, I was eating. So after the run, I was just filling my body with good foods and some not so good foods, I have to admit. It was my birthday after all. But during the run, I did this loop, this 5-ish mile loop. So I added up to just over 26.4 miles in total, I think. And every loop I came by, I'd have one banana, I'd have one 33 shake gel, and I'd have a 0.5 litre of water. And I'd grab that, go back out again, and I'd consume then over the next sort of 5-10 minutes. And I did that 5 times a day for 10 days. And I know that if I hadn't done that, and if I hadn't paid so much attention to the post-run nutrition strategy of getting in the good stuff, then it would have really, really rocked things for the following day. So that was what was important for me for nutrition.
Cool. So if anyone's want to try out that product you mentioned, the 33 Shake Gel, that's the name, isn't it?
Yeah, 33shake.com. I mean, Warren is, he's fantastic. He's a fantastic guy, very, very interesting guy. He wrote an article for Runner's World magazine that he managed to get me kind of featuring in as well last month on ultra running. He's done some of the most. I'm kind of lucky enough to be in a circle of people at the moment who make me frankly look lazy. Warren's just finished the Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc, which is 103 miles around Mont Blanc, with more vertical ascents than Everest. And you know he's doing these things. That's, he started on a Friday night and finished sometime on the Sunday. So, and I'm doing some. I did a webinar with him on Sunday night, and I've got a workshop in Dublin with him next month as well on ultra running. So this is what he does. He's immersed in the world of ultra running and ultra endurance sports, and he's created this product to kind of fill a massive gap in the market, because sports nutrition is a lot of the time just one big old marketing con. Mm. And it's something that everyone buys into. You said yourself you wouldn't take any gels because what do they make you feel sick?
Yeah,
you just go buy water. But you know, we don't, as fitness professionals, certainly we're so used to eating real food and good food. So then it's very alien concept to then just take crap synthetic sports nutrition products just because we have new races. We still want to get the good stuff into our bodies.
Yeah.
And so up until now, it's been quite a hard thing to do.
Cool. Oh, that's good advice. So check out that then, 33shakegel.com, is that right?
33shake.com.
33shake.com. Yeah. Cool. So, George, you've done 10 marathons in 10 days, which is just massively impressive. What are you going to do next?
I'm not really one of these people who goes from challenge to challenge. And one of the reasons I did decide to do the 10 and 10 was because, well, there's a series of signposts that pointed me towards doing something. And one of them was a comment somebody had made at a workshop I ran in Dublin earlier this year. And when I told a story of when I trained for a sub-3-hour marathon back in 2010. And I ran twice a week. So that was my, again, just focus on the quality training. I did that twice a week for 13 weeks or whatever and ran a sub-3 marathon. So I told her that story. And anyway, she left a bit of feedback on the form at the end saying, oh, you know, love the event, great stuff. But just would have been nice to have heard another George story. And that was when I realised that I'd been kind of dining out on that story for 4 years. Probably yeah. About time I did something about that. So that was the first signpost. So I'm not really one to think, okay, I've done this, now what's the next thing? However, I am tempted by the Ironman. Mainly because I'm just not a very good swimmer. In fact, a couple of lengths of a pool would probably leave me panting and hanging out my backside, but it would be enough of a challenge there that I would just need to really, really focus, and I couldn't. I'd still look at trying to hack it and do the minimum possible.
Yeah.
But it frankly scares me to death, the idea of swimming not just for 2.4 miles, but doing it in open water as well.
Yeah.
And then having to do the bike, and then having to run a marathon. But I reckon I could do it.
Yeah.
So probably next year, that's going to be on the cards at some point.
Cool. So, George, for anyone that's listening, fitness professional or someone who is just wanting to get into running, wants to learn more about it, sometimes it can seem like a big thing to tackle. What should people do to start? What would be the one thing you would do if people want to start running and get good at it? One thing to get started?
Well, obviously the first thing, Katie, is to go buy my book. So get yourself over to Amazon and get Beginner's Luck Guide for Non-Runners. It's about just getting out the door and building up some kind of a habit, not having too many expectations. The distance, there's a lot of programs out there that like the Couch to 5K programs, which build you up to running 5 kilometres. But I just found that there's always a temptation there to focus on getting faster. So you're not out there all day long running for 5K, running 5K. So what I did when I wrote the book, Beginner's Luck, was I focused on time and just getting used to running for longer periods of time and actually encouraging people to slow down. Yeah. So when you run slower, funny thing is, it's easier. And so you are able to then build up more confidence that you can do this. Most people, when they start running, will just go too fast and realize and just, you know, feel like, oh, this is really hard. I'm getting really out of breath. I shouldn't be out of breath. I'm going to be running for a minute. I can't run. More evidence that I can't do this.
Yeah.
And then leave it again. Whereas when you run slowly and you realize, oh, I can actually do 4 or 5 minutes here without stopping, that's quite encouraging. So just start off and slow down. That's probably the most important thing to do once you've bought the book.
That is a really good piece of advice. Really good. Whenever I've trained for any running event, I get obsessed with the time and I get obsessed with my pace and tuning into how my body feels at the given pace that I feel like I should be running at.
Yeah, I think everyone has a natural running pace. And one of the hardest things, I mean, you ran a sub-2, didn't you, for the Great North Run? So you ran 2 hours, which isn't hanging about. Now, you probably found at the start that you were passing people within the first sort of 3 miles, 4 miles, who had clearly gone off too quick.
Yeah, 100%.
And it happens every single race, anywhere around the world. There'll be people who start off and they'll zoom off and think, my God, I'm on for a superb PB today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're smashing the times they've been doing and training. Think, wow, the adrenaline of the day, that's obviously carrying me through. But no, it ain't that. It's the fact that you're fresh at the start and you can run faster, but you're not going to sustain that. Mm-hmm. So people make this mistake all the time, not just beginners, but seasoned runners as well, going off too quick and then realizing it's an unsustainable pace. Running slowly enough is hard. You made the point there about being obsessed by pace, and it's an important thing to really, really be able to tune into your body. As you said, you know, you look at the numbers on the Garmin or whatever, but you're also tuning into how it feels. And you need to be able to do that, because you can't just rely on, if you're running at, say, 9-minute mile pace, but you're on an uphill slope, that's going to feel a hell of a lot harder than if you're running at 9-minute mile pace and you're running downhill. Mm. So the pace isn't everything. It's more about how you feel. And a lot of the time, for longer, slower runs, it's about running a lot slower than you think you should be running, certainly at a conversational pace if you want to get all of those nice aerobic gains.
Yeah, that's a good point, a conversational pace. I run sometimes with my best friend, Lindsay, and I try and get her to run really fast. And we get to the point where she just says, Katie, I can't answer any more of your questions. You just talk and I'll listen. So that's really good advice. Lindsay will be pleased to hear that. So from now on, our runs need to consist of Lindsay being able to add to the conversation as well.
Yeah, and as a trainer, you know, you've got the talk test. And no clients ever figure this out. When you're asking them questions, you don't really care what they're saying. You just want to know if they can answer that question or not. If they can, you know, you're training, you're doing a 20-minute, 30-minute run, you want to push them a bit harder, you know, they answer the question and they're just chatting away. Mm. You just run a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And they keep chatting away, you run a little bit faster. And eventually they stop talking. That's when you know you're at the right speed. Mm. So, but what we want to do with this aerobic stuff, yeah, your friend Lindsay, she wants to be slowing down. And you don't want to start pulling her around too fast, Katie, then. Yeah. That's not going to be helping her training.
Yeah. And so she loves it, but she also loves to hate it as well. So she'll be very, very happy to hear that we need to slow down on a Sunday morning. Cool. George, I wanted to ask you as well, is there a common question that I've heard a lot of? What should people be eating before they do a distance run? I'm going to say like anything from like a 10K upwards. What's the best thing to have if you're going to do an event? Best breakfast?
I think you just kind of get used to eating certain foods. And, I mean, I know plenty of people who won't have anything. They'll train and they'll race with nothing at all, technically, in the tank. But that's not going to work for everybody. And certainly it's not something you want to be experimenting with on the day of a big race that you've been preparing for. You've got your classics, porridge. My favourite breakfast at the moment, has been for a while now, is I'll soak oats and chia seeds overnight in almond milk, and then in the morning, I'll wake up and it's all nice and squidgy and soft and mulchy, and just mixing some nuts and chucking some raisins, some chopped apple, dollop of yogurt, mix all that up. And it's a really nice, healthy, energy-giving breakfast that's going to fuel me. Now, if you're not used to eating that and then you have that and you've got all these chia seeds going on and that somehow reacts with your body, you don't want that to be happening at the start line of a half marathon.
Yeah.
But it's whatever you feel is giving you the energy you need. There isn't one perfect breakfast because it is different for everybody. But one thing I would say is experiment, and experiment with trying going out running without anything in the tank.
Yeah.
You know, running on empty, it's very, very, for me, it was eye-opening when I first did that, because I'd always believed, oh, I have to have something to eat first thing in the morning. I can't eat anything. And then I started taking a greens drink and having a glass of water in the morning, and I could just go off and I could do these 20-plus mile runs. I said, oh, my God, this is just like, how's this happening? And then I have something to eat when I got back. It wasn't making any difference at all to my energy on the run.
Yeah.
But then when I was racing, again, my 10 and 10, what I knew that I had to eat something and I had to plan my nutrition for the day because I had to support me for the next day as well. But it's about experiment. You're an experiment of one, Katie, and you've got to try and find what works best for you.
I have to tell you about this, George, right, given the subject that we're talking around. When I was younger, like up to about the age of 16, I used to compete competitively. I used to do cross country and 1500 metres.
Oh, brilliant event, yeah.
I used to do pretty well in my region. And my dad had read somewhere, because my dad was all for improving my performance and you know, making us better. And he'd read somewhere that the perfect meal for me to have before every race would be plain pasta covered with strawberry yogurt.
Is that a northern thing?
I don't think it's anywhere in the world thing, but my dad had found this and he said, this is what you need to eat before every run. So you can imagine, I don't know about anyone else, but
did you do it?
Well, like my dad said, so I did. But I just used, you know what it's like before you do a race? I used to get really nervous and still do if I watch like athletics on the telly. It brings it back. I get really nervous. So you're really nervous, your stomach's churning, and then I'm presented with this. And it wasn't just a little ball, it was like a massive plate. And that's what my dad used to make us eat before I ran 1,500 metres or did cross country.
Do you still kind of, so when you're watching it on the TV now and you think about running, do you still think about plates of pasta covered in jam? What kind of comes to mind, is it?
Yeah, I remember that. I never forget it. And I always still have this big, like, anxious association with running.
Do you still feel nervous now? Okay,
even, I'll quite regularly go and do, like, the park run event.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even the park run, it's not competitive. It's a fun run for just, you know, everybody on a Saturday morning. And I'll wake up on the morning and feel really nervous.
Well, nerves are nearly always linked into expectations and performance anxiety, just how, you know, how you feel you want to perform and whether you've done enough training. I think everybody gets a little bit nervous because there's just a tiny bit more pressure. But the key thing is always to focus on the process. You can't do anything about the result until you've been through the process. And the only way of doing that is by immersing yourself in the process.
Yeah.
And I tell all my runners this, that you just need to think about the training that you have done. Forget about any sessions that you might have missed or things you haven't done. Mm-hmm. Just focus on what you have done, things that have contributed, the sacrifices that you've made, the dedication you've had, the commitment you've displayed to get to where you are, and you're going to have the experience that you're going to have, and what you've done is exactly enough to give you that experience. And as long as you can focus on the actual process, the mechanics of running, of doing all the I was very process oriented when I was doing the 10 and 10. I'd make sure I had the same breakfast. I got all my things lined up the night before. I did my gels. Made sure I went to the supermarket and got all the bananas in. I did all these things. I ticked all those boxes because they were part of the process. And then when I lined up, I'd focus on the process of running itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd focus on my technique. I'd focus on my breathing. I'd focus on my mantras that I'd made for myself that were instrumental in getting me through some of those low points. And then all of a sudden, I was at the end and I'd done it. And it was just about being immersed in the process that got me from A to B. You think about the whole thing, it's very easy to get anxious. It's very easy to get nervous because you're stepping into the unknown. You don't know what's going to happen.
That's good advice, definitely. I think with me, I pile the pressure on myself. Like, I want to get fastest female. I want to get a PB every race. I think sometimes now I just need to chill out and enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having high expectations and going for PBs. I think as long as they're realistic, you know, getting fast as female is less in your control as than getting a fast time.
Yeah,
like getting a PB, for example, because you don't know who else is going to come. You can only control your performance. You can't control everyone else's. So you could only having a really clear idea as to what you can actually do and what you would like to happen as a result of that, I think that can certainly help with steadying nerves at the start as well.
Yeah. George, I'm really interested as well to find out what you predict for, say, the next 12 months in the fitness industry. So whether that be more run-specific or whether that be more bootcamp-specific or just generally, what do you see happening in the fitness industry in the next year? What's your prediction?
Well, I've certainly seen a big shift to more people kind of doing online programs. And it's so easy now to set up online programs and reach out to people, to more people other than those who are in your immediate geographic reach. And I mean, I've been doing online programs for a number of years now, and I know a lot of other coaches and trainers have, and I think that's only going to be increasing. But the quality of those programs as well, and people want more than just weight loss.
Yeah.
Which is always going to be the biggest market, but people just want to feel better. Weight loss is almost a side effect. People want to feel good. They want to feel more confident. They want to feel more energized. If they can lose a few pounds in the process, then great. But I think coming away from just being about the scales is probably where things. I can see things certainly online. I can see things moving in that direction. With regards to the way the fitness industry is going, I haven't really been immersed in the fitness industry, what everyone else is doing, for some time now. I used to do a lot of presenting. I've presented at FitPro a couple of times. I used to go every year. I didn't go this year to the major convention. And I haven't been up to Blackpool or any of the other big ones. And so I haven't really seen what else is happening. But I've certainly been keeping on top of the presenters. I love John Berardi's stuff, and you'll see him going with all of his nutrition. That's all going online as well. He's got loads of great online courses. I just think that trainers are always going to want education. They're always going to want to learn more, become better at what they're doing, and they're going to want to help people in a relevant way, meet people where they are. And I think that the more trainers who are getting these obviously additional skills and going on doing these extra courses and getting these new ideas, then it's then about, well, how am I actually going to deliver that? And that's why I think online is going to be a really, really big boost in the next 12 months.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. And I think as well, the quality of online programs, there's so many different platforms you're going to operate them for now. I think they're only going to continue to grow without a doubt. George, if people want to find out more about you and want to find out more about your book, which is very good, I've got a copy and I've started reading it already.
A signed copy,
absolutely. Where can they find out more about you? What's your website, on Twitter and everything like that?
Okay, well, the main sort of hold all George Anderson website is bygeorgeanderson.com. And then there's links there to pretty much everything, but yeah, Twitter is by George A, Facebook is Coach George Anderson, and I think all those links are on that main site. The running pad, the book itself actually has its own standalone website, which is beginnerslookbook.com. Obviously the book is available to buy on Amazon, but that website will give you a free downloadable copy of the 10-week program. We don't even use weeks, we use levels, we use catch levels. So it's a bit of a different approach to it. But yeah, you can download a free program that I use in the book. And you get a lot of cool extra content and stuff via email as well. So that's worth doing. If you're thinking of getting into running, that's as good a place as any to start. That bygeorgeanderson.com is a link portal to all my other sites.
Brilliant. George, thank you for coming on the podcast. You've shared some cracking stuff. And if anyone's got any questions, please feel free to tweet me or tweet George. But fascinating stuff. Really interested in the background to how you trained for your 10 and 10. And a brilliant story and a massive achievement. I'm sure all of the listeners will agree. So thank you for coming on the podcast. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, see you soon. Thanks a lot. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Katie Ballmer Cook Podcast Show. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and have a great day.